not your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We have just a fine guest with us this evening, and his name is Dr. John Apsley, and he's really a fine and very well-informed doctor about radiation and so forth. He's written a book, and it's entitled Fukushima Meltdown and Modern Radiation. I'm going to bring him on and let him tell you a little bit about his background, and then we'll go ahead and start talking about his book. Welcome to our program, Dr. Apsley.
Well, thank you, George, for having me on. It's a real pleasure. I got interested in what was happening at Fukushima because I was in the middle of writing a book on cancer. And when I saw the supersonic explosion take place at Unit 3, I knew that we were in real trouble here on the west coast of the U.S., and sure enough, I had to put off finishing my cancer book and deal with the issue of, well, how do we deal with this added burden of carcinogens that would be hitting not only the folks in Japan, of course, and we're already starting to see the tumor rate starting to skyrocket, but also how to deal with the immune issues that we're going to be hitting here on the U.S. side, because most cancer patients, as you know, George, have a pretty well worn out immune system that may be the solution in many cases if it could be rallied and restored after their rounds of chemotherapy or radiation. So that's where I got started. I put my cancer book down. I picked up the phone, called some experts I knew. I had already written a section of one of my book chapters back in 1995 on this issue, so I knew who to call. And it was a lot worse than I thought it was. And within about 6 days, of course, we started receiving the first fallout here on the West Coast. And it wasn't but about 6 months later that the Centers for Disease Control data started showing that the immune susceptible, the immune weak, either the older population or the very, very young, that their death rates from the common cold and influenza were skyrocketing as well. So this is just something that most folks don't know about. So that's where we're at.
Right. How does radiation devastate cellular health? How does it affect the cellular health of our bodies?
Well, it's very interesting. If we look at, I'm going to take your listeners in a slightly different direction for a moment. We'll come right back to,
sure,
to your
sure.
question. Because it's very, very, very powerful and interesting. Cancer has an ability to produce an oxygen-free radical that we know as hydrogen peroxide. And it's produced in an exact amount that causes inflammation, and it helps to defeat our immune system. Well, it turns out that both conventional chemotherapy and conventional radiation therapy for treating cancer does exactly the same thing. It produces hydrogen peroxide. So when we look at the natural approaches, we're also looking at herbs that will target the production of hydrogen peroxide right into tumor cells themselves. The difference being that herbs, when they're used properly, will not produce this excessive hydrogen peroxide in the surrounding tissue that are normal and healthy. In fact, most chemotherapeutic agents originally came from a discovery of these herbs that contain these chemicals that do that. That's where the drugs are taken from. Well, in the case of fallout, we have the exact same thing. We have airborne tiny particles that land into our food supply, into our water, and enter into our lungs. And then they just lodge into the tissues, and they constantly emit this what's called ionizing radiation that produces hydrogen peroxide. The difference between a hot particle that comes in from fallout from Fukushima and a dental x-ray is that when you have a dental x-ray, it's over in just a millisecond. That production of hydrogen peroxide ends almost immediately. There's a little bit of spin-off, but it eventually comes to an end on itself. Whereas when you have a hot particle inside your lung tissue, for example, it just keeps on making that hydrogen peroxide like an ever-ready battery. So the next thing that folks need to know is that this excessive production of hydrogen peroxide is something that occurs in such low amounts that it actually becomes more lethal to tissue than if it were in higher amounts. Now, this is very strange. So this was discovered back in 1970 by a physicist in Canada called Pitcal. It's in my book. And he discovered that a very, 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 very low dose of these hot particles will actually induce a billion times more lethal effect on cells than a much, much, much higher level of radiation. Now, the cool thing about herbs is, and this is what I was writing about in my cancer book when I had to put it aside, is it will oftentimes quench or neutralize the hydrogen peroxide that's hitting the healthy cells, but it will not interfere with the hydrogen peroxide that's being produced in the cancer cells so that the cancer cells can self-destruct, which is what they need to do. In the case of what happened after 9/11, when the government was very interested in protecting our first-line responders, such as the police or the fire department, if a dirty bomb went off, they were concerned that some of these dirty bombs might have radiation poisoning in there. And so they got together with a couple of companies, one in particular, and they said, look, could you put together something that would be affordable, that would help protect our first-line responders in the case of a dirty bomb crisis? And what they found was that they could put together a group of natural substances or dietary supplements that would do this. But they also found something else that was very, very compelling. We had suspected this, pardon me, but we did not know it. When you get a little tiny bit of a hot particle in your body, it will amplify by a factor of about 10 any other carcinogen, any other cancer-causing agent that you might have gotten exposed to, such as some pesticide, or if you're a smoker, or if you're eating something in your food that shouldn't be there. It amplifies its cancer-causing effects by tenfold. So although by itself we're constantly told, oh, these hot particles that come over here, they're diluted, they're below normal background, all that type of propaganda, nothing could be further from the truth. And, George, the last thing I want to say about this is that after Three Mile Island happened, which was in the late 1970s, we did have people that were permanently maimed and did develop quite a few cancers. And that was a heck of a legal battle because they had really clamped down on what could and couldn't be said during the trial. It was a real strong attempt to strong-arm the judicial system. And fortunately, a good friend of mine, Arnie Gunderson, and a epidemiologist from North Carolina named Stephen Wing were able to present the data that they were allowed to show that people were indeed seriously injured and that cancer rates did go up. And what Steve Wing proved at that time is that if you have a total amount of radiation that's released, it doesn't matter how dilute it becomes. It will cause the same number of cancers regardless. And so in my book, I began looking at, well, scientifically, how can we explain this? And it turns out, I know the people in Texas really love their beef and their dairy and their dairy farms, that we sit at the top of the food chain. So, George, as this very small amount of dilute radiation starts hitting the folks in Texas, but also the folks here in the west coast of the U.S., yes, when it comes in, we can say it's very dilute, but it will tend to build up 300-fold into our food supply over a given time frame. And so we're not safe. In fact, during the Chernobyl incident, they caused the same thing that the Japanese have done. They said, look, you will not report accurately the number of people that have been hurt or killed due to the Chernobyl incident. That happened in 1987. They said, we're going to put a ban on any sort of reporting for 3 years. Well, in 2006, a group of five Russian epidemiologists, medical physicians, went around and collected all the data. And they found that after 20 years, because radiation particles don't lose their strength, they keep on, like an ever-ready battery, they keep making this hydrogen peroxide, that just under a million people had been killed from the radioactive fallout at Chernobyl, and 8 million had been permanently crippled, I mean totally disabled. Well, Fukushima was at least six times the amount of release of radiation. I hope your folks understand that, that what we're facing and what the northern half of Japan is facing, and now even the southern part of Japan, we're facing no less than six times the number of people killed over 20 years and six times the number of people crippled over 20 years. That's what we're looking at.
Well, what I see also is a continuing release of radiation. I understand they have 1,000 tanks there on the site that are contained radioactive water. I mean, how can that continue to go on?
George, you've been doing some studying. That's right. So
somewhere they have to remediate this on some level.
We don't have the technology to do it properly.
Yes,
there were water scrubbers, water filters that they thought they could bring in, but they can't handle this amount of water that's necessary. So they're in real trouble. And to decommission a totally melted down reactor, and there's like three of them, not just one, but three over there, units one, two, and three, it normally takes to decommission about 3 to 5 years to do it right. But when you have a destroyed building and you have what's called a melt-through, and we know units two and three have a China syndrome, you can't contain that. That's not possible. So they're coming up with all kinds of strange strategies, one of them being that as they dump a ton of water every day onto the devastated buildings where the smoldering radioactive core has melted basically down into the earth, a lot of venting still occurs where it enters into the atmosphere, but a lot of that water has to run off somewhere, and that's what you're referring to. So,
right. What is the China effect? Explain that to our listening audience that are not familiar with such terms.
Sure. So there's different kinds of accidents that can happen at a nuclear power plant. There are constant releases that happen. That's why there are stacks. You can see there are tall stacks where people, because you can't see it, it's not like a pollution that you can smell or see, that there's a constant amount of radiation that comes out that everyone's receiving. That's just normal operating procedure. We now know that children that live within 5 miles of an operational and properly operating nuclear power plant have up to 200% more of the bloodborne cancer rate than the rest of the kids around the country. And we also know that women who live within 50 miles of an operating nuclear power plant will suffer three times the amount of breast cancer. So that's just normal operations. That's number one. Number two, when there is an accident, when there is an excess amount of venting that occurs due to either an excessive amount of steam that's generated and it starts to overwhelm the system, they have to really vent a lot more radiation. And one of them in particular is called tritium. It's a radioactive form of hydrogen. And because hydrogen gets everywhere, it enters in, it becomes water, it enters into our food supply, and it's a real nasty ubiquitous. It just goes everywhere into the food and into the air and all that. It's causing a lot of what I just talked about with the kids and with the women. But during a time when there's a crack into the containment vessel that's holding this reactive core that's producing heat that actually produces steam to drive a generator, that's, Einstein said, is a crazy way for us to boil water, is with these nuclear power plants, because that's what it does. It boils water to make steam to power up a turbine. When there's a crack that occurs, then we get more leakage, either out onto the floor of the containment building, which is what happened at units 1, 2, and 3 almost immediately, and then you can also get explosions or severe venting that occurs. And we saw the explosions that occurred at Unit 1 and at Unit 3. Sometimes the amount of venting due to the destruction on the inside of the containment vessel is so big, and the water and the molten core unite, make contact so quickly, that the explosions can be much, much more intense. And we saw that at Unit 3. Unit 3 was a supersonic explosion. It jettisoned radioactive material 5 kilometers into the air almost instantly. This was much greater than the one at Chernobyl, and it was much greater than the one at Unit 1 that had happened just a couple days before. And so we had a lot more of this lack of containment, the break of containment that occurred. Now we have a problem where that molten core has no containment to it, and the building itself on its floor level, where there's nothing below that but earth, can be up to 8 feet thick. And it's just a matter of time, because that molten core will not cool. There's no way to cool it down once it loses that kind of containment. They can try with water, and that's about it. It's going to eventually melt through that 8 foot thick concrete. And that's what we're looking at with units 2 and 3. That's called a China syndrome. That means that the molten core has no containment. It will enter in with all of its radioactivity into the aquifer, the groundwater, and will enter into the Pacific Ocean. Unit 1, it looks like it's going to head that way if it hasn't already. It is a molten core that's laying on the bottom of the floor of Unit 1, and no one can get into any of these units to really take a close inspection because it's lethal. They can't even send in robots. It's very difficult because it's so tricky. These buildings have been so badly damaged. But they do know that sooner or later, all of that molten radioactive material is going to enter into the ground system at in and around Fukushima. And here's the problem, George. When General Electric built the facility back in the early 60s, they did something really dumb. There was a hill that went up from the ocean front, and that hill had groundwater that ran from the hill down into the ocean. Well, that's where the nuclear power plant stands in between. So now this groundwater is constantly naturally coming in and around and underneath these totally destroyed reactor buildings, and whatever radioactivity that it runs into is just taking on into the Pacific Ocean. And this is going to continue for about 20 years. There's no way to stop it. So what the Japanese are trying to do, which isn't going to work, they're trying to build a containment, be like a long rectangle that will go around all of these different reactors. And they're trying to fill it up with water that they will freeze. And I think that that is something that, from an engineering point of view, it might make sense to some. But to the international community of real experts, it makes very little sense. And so I think we're going to have a catastrophe for centuries in the Pacific Ocean, and it's going to make the seafood from the northern Pacific inedible.
There are some fishermen that have provided information just recently about the Bering Sea being polluted already. Is that true, and would that impact the fisheries up there?
Well, we have two sources now that we've been talking about. We have the sources of radiation that are coming in from Fukushima that are being dumped directly into the Pacific Ocean. We also have the about three times the size of Great Britain of floating radioactive debris that as the tsunami hit that part of Japan, and as it rolled back into the ocean, it pulled all of this radioactive debris with it. And now it's floating, and it's headed straight for the U.S. West Coast. It's already at or just barely shy of the Hawaiian Islands, and a lot of that has also gone into the Bering Sea. So we have debris. We have just pure water that's been contaminated in huge amounts, three times that of the water pollution that happened at Chernobyl. And then we have the constant air fallout. So, George, what you said earlier is quite correct. We had an initial wave when the explosions occurred of a massive amount of radiation that will enter into the food chain and be part of the U.S. food supply for about 300 years, starting the first 3 months after March 11th of 2011. But to your point, because we're constantly having no containment during this entire time period, we have further venting and we have constant water runoff into the Pacific Ocean. Both of those are constantly adding more pollution that's radioactive into the Pacific Ocean, including, depending on which way the wind is going and the water currents, up to the Bering Sea, which, as you know, is a huge fisheries area for the U.S. fishing fleet. So, yes, it's a devastated area in many of those areas, and it's only going to get worse with time.
Now, the difference between Chernobyl and Fukushima was Chernobyl was, what, landlocked? But Fukushima is right there on the Pacific Ocean. That's why it's so dangerous. Is that not true?
Well, yes. We only had one Chernobyl. We had three destroyed reactor buildings there at Fukushima, and we have a total amount of fuel that could be way in excess of six times the amount of radioactive fuel that will eventually be liberated into the environment than we had at Chernobyl. But here's the other big thing, George. We have at least seven times the population density. So Chernobyl is in an area where the old Soviet Union was. It's now in Belarus, that part, the northern part of Ukraine and the very southwestern aspect of Russia. There aren't very many people there. There's a lot of farmland there, and those farms that are still operational within hundreds of miles spread out from Chernobyl are still producing radioactive foods that are being sent everywhere into the world for export. So we have seven times the population density in the Fukushima accident, and we have six times the amount of radioactive material. So if you do the math, we might be looking at anywhere from a six-fold to a 42-fold intensified crisis than what we've seen at Chernobyl. The problem with Chernobyl was folks still aren't admitting what the real death rates were and what the real the numbers of crippled were. They're still covering it up.
Well, you know, the gentleman had been forthcoming on this, and neither has TEPCO. And they've been accused of covering up and so forth. And, you know, it's just outright lying at times, it seems like to me. What would your comments be?
Well, you know, I have to get a little bit political about this just for a moment.
Sure.
I can't stand socialism. I can't stand it.
Right.
It's everything that the United States is not about. The founding fathers were about free enterprise. And let me explain so that the good people in Texas can understand what it is that someone who's not from Texas also gets. The founding fathers were dealing with a dictator in England, a king, who was declared as the sovereign. That means he owned everything, and he could do anything he wanted to. So when they made the Constitution, what the debate was fundamentally about was to make every U.S. citizen a sovereign, so that as long as we didn't step on the toes of another sovereign, we could do whatever we wanted to. Well, that is called free enterprise. Well, what's happened now is that we have a bunch of cronies. We have a bunch of cronies who don't care if it's going to be a capitalistic system. They've got the whole system wrapped up that way. Or if it's going to go into socialism, they don't care. They'll wrap themselves into government, and they'll just take all the power and the money that way. So we have a corruption factor that has always been part of government stretching back 5,000 years. What the Founding Fathers then said was is that we have to decentralize the central authority. We have to keep it local, keep the democracy a republic by making it so that if you stepped on my toes, right, if I'm your neighbor and I'm blowing heavy amounts of tobacco smoke into your children's faces, you're going to get in my face and tell me to stop it. That's what free citizens with free enterprise do to work their problems out. We don't rely upon government to fix this, but that's exactly what everyone's been trying to do is that, hey, government, you need to fix this for us. Well, guess what? They don't know how, and they do not know how for two reasons. First of all, most of government doesn't know that the Bush administration went ahead and said, hey, listen, would you please study a safe way to protect our first responders in case they run into a dirty bomb? Most of government doesn't know that data is out there, that these safe dietary supplements are available. They just don't know because the government's too darn big. The second thing is that they want to cover it up because of the cronyism. The power industry is second to none in terms of ruling the world economies, not only the U.S., but also all over the place. So if they want to invest their billions and billions of dollars into nuclear power at taxpayer expense up front, and then when there's a crisis, like Three Mile Island here in the U.S., the taxpayer has to bail them out. So they get it both ways because they've infiltrated our government. This is capitalism, and this is crony capitalism. And we can't use our government any longer to protect us. We have to protect ourselves, and it can be as simple as understanding what these basic dietary supplements are. So we can get into that a little bit later, George.
Well, I agree with you positively on that. I was a big supporter, Charlotte Littlefield myself, of Ron Paul going back to 2007. And we worked all over the country on his behalf, and we could certainly agree with everything you just said. That's for sure. The Japanese government is such authoritarian, and the people are such willing to go and bend to their authority that they will believe what the government is telling them. That's a problem over there that I see.
Well, I think we started the problem with Woodrow Wilson. Developed
yeah.
the art form of propaganda that Hitler then adopted and took over Germany. And
right.
then we see that now the Japanese at that time, they were chumming, going back far enough, they were chumming with Hitler at the time. They understood what propaganda was. They became experts at it. But now we see it back here in the U.S.
Well, the Federal Reserve in 13 gave them the power to create money, and that's where this crony capitalism has been building up at. See, that's the problem.
Yeah, the banking system itself, that's right.
When they took over the monopoly of money creation, then they had a lock on all commerce and industry, business. And from there, they built up this crony capitalism. And then in reaction to that, the collective left is trying to go against that. But they don't know what they're attacking, see.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They criticize capitalism in a general way, and it's crony capitalism that we're all against. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Should be, you know.
Yeah,
but anyway,
right.
it's very deceptive, and people are beginning to wake up, and Austin, Texas is a center of a certain amount of freedom and liberty movement. We're going to all go up next week to Dallas up there, and the local mayor only issued 5,000 tickets to the memorial service. So, so they're limiting that, you know.
Yeah.
But we're going to do our own people's memorial and our own protesting of that, curtailment of our liberties and free speech rights, you know.
Sure.
But
sure.
It's just like this Chernobyl thing, and then they've kept a lid on it. The Fukushima, though, is what I tried to do about a year and a half, 2 years ago, was get together a conference, you know, and I failed to do that. But, you know, we need to do that, don't you think, Doctor? We need a really international conference where we can Skype people in from all over the world and get the very best brains to try to confront this major world crisis, and that's what it's evolved into. What do you think?
I have my misgivings. I think that if all of us are – let's talk about the West Coast here.
Sure, sure. Go ahead.
You're talking about Texas. did not get as hit as other parts of the country, particularly here on the West Coast. And plus, you guys don't get as much rainfall. So this plume of fallout continues to circle the northern hemisphere. It's continuing to circle and will continue to circle for 20 years. And every time there's a major rainstorm, it comes down in mass. And when that happens, like it did in Philadelphia about a month after Fukushima had the tsunami, then the infant death rate skyrockets. And so what I'm saying is that I don't think that those kinds of things are going to work unless all those people already understand how to protect themselves.
Well, that's a good point. The conference that I foresee and have a vision for is one day of remediation and one day of personal health.
Okay.
See what I mean?
Okay.
And in other words, you're right on top of it, and this is what piqued my interest about your work and your career so far, is you're right on top of this personal health issues and the alternative medical, angle here. And if we have one day of remediation and just try to give them some advice, the Japanese are not friendly and not open to receiving advice on this yet.
No, and they've been offered a lot of help from a lot of very, very smart people, and they've completely refused it.
But that couple, at least we can try one day of that, get the biggest brains and say this is what we're presenting to them nevertheless. And then the second day could be like right down your alley, right? And John B. Wells, he markets some detectors and things like that. We need to pull together, some sponsors with that make radiation detectors, people like yourself that have some of the nutrients and supplements that will help people, and have you speak and have John B. Wells and other people, speak. But we don't need to actually do this on a physical basis anymore, see?
Sure, we could do it long distance through Skype or whatever.
I can get an auditorium that's multimedia at University of Texas, and then we can Skype people in at different hours throughout the whole world, see, during the
good
conference
idea.
Hours. And then that way we'll have them interviewed during their waking hours, and then we'll bring those people in over an 8, 10, 12-hour period of the two conference days, 10 to 12 hours long each, and then Skype people in, and then bring some people in. Here in Austin, we have quite a university, but also Texas A&M has nuclear scientists, power scientists down there, nuclear
mm-hmm.
energy.
Right.
And so we could provide some input from them, and we could have a small panel discussions along with Skyping people in like yourself and other people throughout the world, see?
Well, the problem with it is that how does cronyism work? Cronyism works by the industry with the money being able to purchase up all of the top scientists so that they can bend science according to what they want.
Right.
And so that's basically the way that universities are running right now. So if you're looking, let me give you an example.
I'm not talking about the university sponsoring this. We're just going to hold it on their campus. See what I mean?
Yeah, but it's different. It's different if you're talking about getting some of the experts from the university.
I know what you're saying. I know. I've run into this already. There's a scientist out of Texas Tech, a nuclear scientist, that was the first one out at Chernobyl, that was rendering some kind of report about low-level radiation, and I could not disagree more with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I know the hustles out there, if you know what I'm saying. I'm 69 years old. I've been down. I didn't just get off the boat, okay? And so I know the dynamics of what you're speaking to here, and I couldn't any more agree with you. I agree with you completely with what you're saying. But we have to still address the personal health problem, and I think that's where you can make a very, very good contribution.
Well, if you're looking for the top nuclear physicists in the world and physicians in the world that are dealing with this and that can be done long distance like you're talking about, we can certainly get those experts to you to help you to pull this off rather than to look and try to reinvent the wheel and discover who's honest and who's being bought and paid for. We can certainly get you a list, including a former Nobel Prize winner. So There are ways in which the truth can come out, if that's what you're trying to do.
I think we've got to put everything on the table. Helen Caldicott, are you familiar with her?
I am, uh-huh.
Well, I've interviewed her before, and she did hold nearly a year ago, last March, a symposium in New York City that was a two-day event, and it was fairly good. She has videos up, okay? But in conjunction with this conference, we would be webcasting it worldwide also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we're not going to just limit ourselves to the University of Texas or the United States. We're going to go worldwide with it, and people will be able to pull it up on their computer connections and view a small window, you know, of the proceedings. And then we'll record it and have it for on demand also.
Okay. Sure.
We've done up to 13-hour presentation. We did a Paul Festival in Tampa last summer. It was 13 hours long, you know. You know what I mean? And so we've done some pretty long, well, 2012, I should say. But we've done some pretty long type of events, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we can pull it off on the webcast. We've got the facilities out there. I failed in this because I just couldn't get anyone interested. Now everyone knows about this problem. Don't you think there's more publicity about it now?
There is, and I think it unfortunately will likely grow. There's, of course, an attempt to keep everything suppressed. Any little mistake over there is potentially deadly, and I do believe that we have enough in on those that are over there that if any major event does occur that we would know pretty quickly. So
I think this can bring the left and the right together, the liberals and the conservatives and the moderates and the libertarians. I think it can bring us all together because we're all threatened by the health danger.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And there are experts out there that could that are very eloquent in stating this case.
Yeah,
I'm a little coarse at it, but I
no, we need you to speak for sure. That's for sure. And Caldicott can come in from Australia, Sydney area there, and we can bring others in. There's what's his name over in England? He's a radiation.
Chris Busby.
Yeah. We can bring Chris Busby in, bring Arnie, Gunnarsson in. And there were some other people there the other day. I know you appeared on the Coast to Coast program there with John B. Wells. And you seemed to mention, well, of course, Arnie was on there, and you were on there. And then there was a third or fourth individual on there.
Yeah, I would recommend Joe Mangano.
You said that. Yeah.
Yeah, from the Radiation Organization, and also Janet Sherman. She's an MD epidemiologist in Michigan. They both written extensively on the Centers for Disease Control data that showed that the infants and the elderly that had poor immune system function really suffered greatly when they got hit from the Fukushima fallout here. Like, for example, in Vancouver, there was a well over 45% increase in infant death rate. And in Philadelphia, it was closer to 60%. And those numbers also reflect the elderly that had a poor immune system as well. Both those numbers are together. Those are the kinds of data tracking that Joe Mangano and Janet Sherman are experts at.
Right. You also mentioned in some of your past interviews about natural, like mushrooms and kelp and stuff like that. How does that work?
Well, if you look at how the immune system works and how we discriminate against viruses and fungus and bacteria, it's all about hydrogen peroxide. And we change it, manipulate it around to become a little bit more toxic in terms of how the oxygen looks to these critters. And then it kind of, like a hand grenade, it blows them up. And so we control it. We use antioxidants to keep it under control. And when we eat properly, we can contain it, and we can stay healthy, and these organisms don't cause as much of a health problem. But when we don't eat properly, when we don't have the minerals that are in the soil, which help to make these antioxidant enzyme systems work, then we start getting sick. And to that point, we really don't have any percentage of Americans. It's way under 1% now of Americans that are actually truly healthy. So everyone in America is sick currently. And right prior to the nuclear testing that basically Eisenhower did above ground, right prior to that, the United States was actually dropping in terms of its numbers of disease rates across the board, and our longevity was also increasing. As soon as those nuclear bombs started going off above ground, there were vast swaths of the United States out west and continued on with the air current into the Chicago area that started going in reverse. We started seeing higher rates of all kinds of different diseases, particularly immune-related. And, of course, then either that causes an immediate effect on the health or causes longer term. And so then they started popping up nuclear power plants to compound the problem in the 1970s. And as that occurred and these nuclear power plants came online, because they amplify every other known cancer-causing or disease-causing substance in the environment tenfold, they increase its ability to be toxic by tenfold, then the health of the public started just plummeting, just falling off a cliff. And we spent about $8,000 per person in the United States for health care now prior to the Obamacare. It's going to double, of course. And we spend about twice as much as any other nation on Earth, and basically nobody's healthy. So there's something horribly wrong here. Well, underneath it all, there's these other reasons, of course. The environment is the biggest thing. But underneath it all, we have something that will amplify by tenfold any other of these toxins, which is this low level of radiation. So once we understand that and we know what to deal with it, we know how to deal with it because it produces hydrogen peroxide. We know we have a system in our body that's designed to handle that. Then we can look at how to not only neutralize it, but then we can accelerate repair. We can catch back up from all of the loss we've had over the decades of not really having our cells work properly. And that's where the mushrooms come in. That's where the food-grade algae comes in. These superfoods that are used by the longest living cultures and a few other foods, like good, healthy, raw liver that we can get in capsules, you can get in tablets, you don't have to taste it, from healthy animals. These kinds of regenerating nourishment is what I call them, will trigger accelerated repair in the human body. And every time that that the natural healthcare community starts getting into this, there's a swath of challenges that come about with disinformation and misinformation from the conventional medical community because they don't know anything about it. They think that there's no science behind it. They think that everything is hunky-dory the way things are, even though that there's no such thing today as a healthy American, even though we spend $8,000 per person to stay sick. They just don't get it because they're not trained in nutrition in medical school. They don't get the courses. So we have to have the republic restored, which means, George, you can't design a symposium, a webinar big enough with authorities with the focus to get government to change. That's not going to work. The largest political movements that have ever happened in the United States were the grassroots kind that made the people change. And the first, by far the most powerful that we ever saw was Vietnam. We had massive, massive demonstrations across the country against the Vietnam War. But the second most powerful political movement the United States has ever seen is the one against the FDA stopping the ability for people to purchase their nutraceutical dietary supplements in the stores. That came about in 1992, 1993, and until 1994, when the law changed and it curtailed the FDA's power to therefore enable the dietary supplements to be sold freely without the FDA clamping down on it, that was the most powerful political movement the United States has ever seen before, and then everyone started coming on board, and here's the reason why. The United States of America has the very best politicians that money can buy.
Yeah, that's right.
The very, very best.
And people are paying them off, right?
Right. And we don't have politicians, except for a few, George, that you know, that are very moral people. We have people that can be bought and paid for. And there are people that they go to law school to become a politician just so that when they start accepting money, that they don't go to jail for it. That's why they go to law school, to figure out how to do it right.
Yeah.
Okay?
Good point, John.
So you do not see all politicians, and Rand Paul would probably be the first to agree with this, all politicians, including Ted Cruz, including Mike Lee, all politicians need to not be trusted. That's what the founding fathers said. When they said that liberty will reign when the government does not trust its people, because the people are where the government is. It's not our representatives. Why? Because so often by the time that some good-intentioned, moral person gets to Washington, D.C., the strong-arming is so intense just to get elected the next time around. Where is that money going to come from? So as a republic, we are the government. We take care of our own health. The FDA is not going to fix us. The current conventional medical system, which is about as cronyistic as it gets, isn't going to fix us. We're already 40th in the world rankings for health. In other words, we're that sick. We're 40th. We're not first. We spend $8,000 per person, and we're not number one in health in the world. We're 40th. That's how sick we are. And that's because medicine has taken over through cronyism the way that medicine is, the industrial medicine is done today.
Yeah, Peter,
and so,
Greg, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We have to fix ourselves. If you do a webinar based upon we the people fixing ourselves, then that will be like the largest political movement that we've ever had.
Well, that's a good way to frame it. I think that's an excellent idea, John. You know? And people power here. We can use the web. We can do a webinar all over the world, international. We can bring the finest minds in on connections like that and try to get some things done.
Well,
we have to do it. I think we just have to do it. You know, the results and the, you know, may not be what we want in the end, but we have to stand up and declare that this is something that needs to be done, period, you know.
Yep, I agree.
but I mean, it's such a bad, Fukushima is such a, it's an international crisis that the most dangerous thing that's occurred, I would say that the 9/11 precedes it, but in a political way of being the most dangerous political event. This is the most dangerous physical event. What do you think?
Yes, if you were to look at the possibilities for another earthquake,
As being
as high as they are before they can offload all of Unit 4. So we've been talking about Units 1, 2, and 3. But really, other than the fact that Unit 3 is just a total disaster, total China syndrome, it'll devastate for centuries what's going on there. Now, we'll continue to roll out. What we have at Unit 4 hasn't really completely happened yet. Something can be done to prevent what might be one of the world's greatest catastrophes of all time. And that's what we should probably talk about for a few minutes if we have some time. So here's what's going on.
Go ahead. We have plenty of time. Yeah.
Okay. So if people want the fully referenced blurb on this, they can go to my website at drapsley.com, and you'll see a bunch of tabs at the very top, and just click on the radiation antidote tab. And it will take you through this. It's all documented, so I'll review it for you. What is teeter-tottering right now in terms of disaster is that Unit 4 building has a huge amount of stored radioactive fuel rods in there, and it's tilting over from both the soggy water from the groundwater and also the tsunami that hit. And that building is tilting over at quite an angle. And the fact that there are earthquakes that commonly occur there. And so between those two things of the ground just really failing underneath this huge three-story building that has a huge amount of water sitting in the swimming pool on top, so it's very heavy, and it's tilting, they have to remove 1,550 15-foot-long assemblies. That's jam-packed nuclear fuel rods, like a pack of cigarettes, 1,551 of these things, weighing about a half a ton each, 15 foot long, that are tilting. And they have to be removed somehow in such a way that they don't break apart, and most of them have been damaged from the three or four fires and two or three explosions that occurred back in 2011 during the crisis. So when they lift them out with the crane, they're going to try to put them into a stainless steel container underwater, because the pool is pretty deep, and then haul them off and try to put them off into a safe place. Well, that's going to take 18 months. If at any point in time, due to a secondary earthquake or from an accident of the assemblies being so damaged to begin with, that they fall apart and they land on top of each other, like a pack of cigarettes where you have a cigarette landing on top of the pack of cigarettes, then a criticality fire could outbreak. And if that happens, then X-rays start getting produced, and everyone has to evacuate the property. Now, a lot of this is done through remote control, but you can't do certain things under remote control. There's some things you can and some things you can't. So the hope is that they can do this without having any of these damaged assemblies fall apart midway, because if they do, then 200 feet away from this building is one of the world's largest supplies of nuclear fuel rods that exists. Now, it's older fuel rods, but they still have quite a punch of radioactivity in them. If Unit 4 has a catastrophe where they have a fire and they can't put it out, eventually that's going to break apart the automated systems on the entire property. And either that or the danger of an earthquake will then destroy or upset the automated system at one of the world's largest storage facilities. When you have those two possible calamities coming together at the same time, that would cause basically a lethal event across most of the northern hemisphere, because that would seep huge amounts of radioactive cesium and strontium along with other radionucleotides like iodine and kryptonite and xenon and these other things that would waft across the northern hemisphere and would contaminate the food supply for centuries at rates that would be unimaginable. We've already had pretty bad results with the first hit at Fukushima. This would be absolutely catastrophic. So what we're looking at is that everything goes safely at Unit 4. That's what our eyes have to be on. And as long as that occurs, then we can deal with the cleanup. And we start with ourselves. We start with making sure that our own antioxidant systems are back online again, because that's good for everything. That's good for our health in general, to get us back to where we're the healthiest people on the planet. We have a lot of cleaning out to do first. And that's where the algae comes in. That's where the good, healthy kelp comes in. The seaweeds from the Atlantic come in. That's where the mushrooms come in. Because all of those foods not only help the body to repair itself at very, very fast rates, but they also remove radioactive particles from the body. And this was shown with the children at Chernobyl. Removed very quickly over a few months the contaminants that were in the children's body. So they're very effective.
You know, what just occurred to me was we had programs, two programs, that we interviewed military personnel on the ground in Japan within days or weeks after the Fukushima. There was an assessment team at one of the Air Force bases there in Tokyo. What's occurred to me just a few seconds ago is there any regime in the military now that can use some of your supplements and vitamins and so forth to begin a program, a regime right now of our military and dependent personnel?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because we've been contacted by a group of the sailors that were on the USS Reagan, and they were steered, their aircraft carrier was steered into the plume right during the crisis.
And so yes,
There were 5,000 sailors on there, and they all got dosed heavily. Well, their health concerns are, there's just a plethora of catastrophic diseases that those poor sailors are undergoing right now. We're going to be trying to help them, and one of the things we can do is to try to come in and help their body remove these hot particles, and so there are particular things that will help to do that. And we know that it works because it was successful with the kids at Chernobyl. And then we're going to help them to catch up with the repair mechanisms. But those folks that have the cancers already, and there's quite a few, that's a little trickier because they're going to be stuck in the VA system if they're out of the military or if they're still part of the military. They're going to be using conventional medicine to deal with something that conventional medicine isn't able to really deal with. They don't even understand how to take out hot particles from the body. If my hope is that, at the very least, that we can get the studies that were done post 9/11 that showed how to remove this from the bodies of our first responders into the hands of these people, and actually be meeting with these people by telephone tomorrow.
Boy, that's excellent. You're doing some. You're making a really difference. I will say that. We've got about 3 minutes left. 3 minutes and 10 seconds left. Is there anything else you wanted to add that we didn't cover? I know there's so much to talk about, but is there any item or any fact or comment you'd like to make in the last 3 minutes?
Yes, there is, and thank you, George, for that. We've never done this before, but this is if there's any group of people more worthy of us helping, I can't think of one than our military. Our military are the finest people in the whole world.
Yes, they are.
And the USS Reagan, the entire ship, all those sailors were hurt very badly. If anybody would like to send $1 or $5 or $10 to help those people, I will make sure that it gets to the right kinds of dietary supplements. We will not take any profit from that. We will make sure that 100% of those proceeds go directly to the sailors. And I'm also going to be giving away as many of my books as I possibly can so that the sailors can read up on how that they can protect themselves in the future, especially their children, unrelated to their event at Fukushima, but in the future they will know how to do that. So if folks want to help out with that, they can email me at japsley@msn.com. Or they can go to my website at drapsley.com, and there's a email there they can contact me through.
Yeah, could you put up a special little note on that maybe on your site somewhere to where when they come in there it could be a special little note there where they could concerning this money going to these vets and so forth? That might be very good.
Yes, I will put it at the very top of it. It'll be on the left sub-tab at the very top. Once people click on, once they go to my site,
right,
they'll see Radiation Crisis Antidote. That'll be a tab at the top.
Oh, that would be great. And that way they can go straight and contact you directly through the email and start the process of giving that money to the vets and people that really deserve it. Well, over this last 57, 58 minutes, I think we covered a lot of the ground, and I think the individual health benefits that you're bringing are just, I can't speak any more positively about your work and what you're doing. Would you have any final comment here in the last minute?
Well, just thank you, George, and keep up your great work. Let's do that webinar. That sounds like a great thing to do, and I'll help you whichever way I can.
Well, I tell you what, we need to do it. I failed in not doing it before now, but let's get together. We'll get some email going between ourselves, and we'll get this thing done. And I certainly do appreciate you coming on the program and all the fine work you've done.
Well, thank you, sir, and same right back at you.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Good night.
Yeah, bye-bye now.